Sitting in for the indefatigable one, George Norrie, taking a much-deserved night off. And we are heading into Open Lines. It's a national institution here on Coast to Coast AM, your chance to shine. And I know you'll bring your A material. If you have a line and you want to discuss a mind control, electronic harassment, perhaps you believe you're a targeted individual, hold on to that line and we can continue to pursue that subject matter throughout the course of the evening and into the morning. Here's another log I'd like to throw onto the fire, and another interesting story that Sean Latisore has posted on the In the News section up at coasttocoastam.com, and it has to do with a paranormal tour of a notorious prison in Ohio. It's called the Mansfield Reformatory, and it was hosted by Nick Groff. He's the host and the executive producer of a program called Ghost Adventurers. And he led this tour. And during the tour, apparently, overnight, somebody was attacked by some unseen force. And you can read all about it, again, at the In the News section. It's called We Investigated Mansfield Reformatory with Nick Groff and Got Attacked by a Ghost. And there's a photograph of the individual who was attacked, sort of pushed down, and then ended up with these strange sort of welts on his back. They almost look like scratches. I'll let you read the article and decide for yourself as to what happened. But I was recently talking to someone about haunted locations here in Toronto, and we have a number of very famous haunted locations, including the Keg Mansion on Jarvis Street here in Toronto. And people have reported going into the washroom and seeing the taps turn on by themselves. There's also a recurring situation where people will see a shadow that appears to be swinging from a noose from a chandelier in the main stairway. And according to the legend or the history of the Keg Mansion before it became a restaurant, there was a housekeeper there that supposedly hanged herself. I'm not sure if that's an apocryphal story or not. However, that is the legend of Keg Mansion, and many people that go there hoping to have a nice steak dinner do so, but then they also have some sort of ghostly encounter. What I'm wondering is, what is the most haunted location in your neck of the woods? Let me just throw that out there. So if you'd like to respond to that, we'll make the phone lines available to you. And when we come back, we'll also pursue mind control, electronic surveillance, and social engineering right here on Coast to Coast AM. Stay with us. And away we go. It's Open Lines, and we'll go with Lee on the wildcard line calling in from Los Angeles. Lee, good morning. Welcome to Coast.
Hey, guys. How are you doing today?
Very well, thank you.
That's good. That's good. Listen, I just wanted to say that, Richard, I'm a targeted individual. I've been targeted since 2011, and I actually testify in front of the Board of Police Commissioners on the post-traumatic stress disorder that firemen and police suffer from, and that's one of the reasons that they targeted me, because I know just how bizarre and mentally ill cops are. It may be 90% of cops and firemen are actually mentally ill, and post-traumatic stress is a mental illness. It's considered a mental illness by the American Psychiatric Association.
So, Lee, let me just stop you there, just so that I understand and we're on the same page. You believe you are being targeted because you have information that a certain percentage of police department officials, firefighters, are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yeah, no, that's not why. See, I didn't know why I was targeted at first. I didn't know that's what it was. I started doing my research. They just started targeting me. I come home from work one night. I got up at 9 o'clock, and the police helicopter, I ride a bicycle almost a mile from my former job to where I live in downtown Los Angeles, and the helicopter put its light on me and started flickering the light back and forth. And that was in 2011. And when I got home that first night, I took off my clothes, and the sirens went off. And they had been doing that for like 3 weeks. So I decided to do an experiment. When I got home, I left my clothes on because I'm a night owl. I'll stay up all night watching TV and watching movies, 2-3 in the morning. And I left my clothes on. I didn't hear a thing. As soon, and I share a communal bathrooms where I am. And I took my clothes off to go take a shower. And as soon as I did that, the sirens went off. And that's when I realized. And then they started coming past my window with the floodlight. You know that floodlight that they have on the ladder truck?
Right, right. Are you saying the fire department is involved as well?
Yeah, it's mostly the fire department. Every now and then its top comes by, hits the horn and siren, and then as soon as they get by my place, they turn it off. Well, the firemen came by and they hit my window with that floodlight. And there was only one reason to use that floodlight. It's when you're fighting a fire. But they hit my, as soon as they came around the corner, hit my light with the my window.
I'm not quite understanding the connection between this, and I would refer to this probably as organized stalking.
Right.
Why you're being targeted and what this has to do with your notion that a certain percentage of firefighters and police suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder. Are you saying that the perps in your case are individuals that are mentally ill?
Correct. And I'm saying because they suffer, you know, these people have seen horrific things. I mean, these people have seen burned bodies, and they got that smell of a burned body firing up their nose, and you can't get that stuff out of your head. The father's murdered the entire family, and the 9-year-old's head blown off while it was sleeping, and the white pillow is soaked with blood. See, all I do is I will actually describe this to people, and they get sick. These people have actually seen it. You understand what I'm saying?
Well, we all understand that police and firefighters have seen some pretty incredible or indelible, horrific things. But I don't quite understand how you make that leap that because that happens to them, that they're going to suddenly start stalking you. I mean, I'm not discounting that these things aren't happening to you, but I'm just trying to understand why you believe it's due to their post-traumatic stress disorder.
Well, remember, Richard, post-traumatic stress disorder changes your personality. And understand one thing. I live right across the street from fire station number 9. Those are the ones that have been stalking me. They actually came into my work after stalking me for 2 years. They came, they come by my place of business, blaring their horns and sirens. As soon as they came, they got past, they turn them off. And that would go on 20, 30 times a day. Can you imagine a siren hit your place 20, 30 times a day? And finally, I filed a complaint with the Professional Standard Division. And once I did that, they knew I was on to them. And it got even worse after that, once I filed the complaint with the Professional Standard Division. And here's the crazy thing, Richard. One of the fire chiefs came out to meet me at Denny's downtown, and I showed him, you know, them coming by my place with the light hitting my window with the light, and he said, "Now you say they were gang stalking you," and I said, "Wait a minute." I said, "What's that?" He says, "Now this happened in 2012. He said, "You said they were gang. These people, these firemen were gang stalking." I said, "I never said that. I said call stalking. I didn't even know what gang stalking was until he said it." He was
a
fire captain, and he said it. I said, "What's gang stalking?" He said, "Well, that's what you wrote the letter for." I said, "No, I said call stalking. I don't know what gang stalking is." And he said, "Well, you wrote the letter." I said, "Let me see the letter." He wouldn't let me see the letter because I put call stalking in there.
Why you? Is it possible that there's a firefighter across the street that has some personal vendetta against you?
Or, hang on to your hat. Or there is a large number. Remember, I told you when I took my clothes off, the sirens went off. And they kept doing that every night for 3 weeks. Or there's a large number of gay firefighters and gay policemen on the down low who see a man who they like on the street.
Well, that does not fit the profile of a perp. I think we're really reaching now.
And guess what? That when I heard people say that they kept hearing voices and stuff like that. I thought they were reaching. And believe me, Richard, if this was not happening to me and someone told me it was happening to them, there's no way I would believe them. And that's why I testify in front of the Board of Police Commissioners, in front of Chief Charlie Beck, and gave him letters saying, are you going to investigate this thing? Because what the one thing I want, you have to understand, Fire Captain Matthew Phillipson,
okay, I don't want to mention any names here, Lee, because that's going to get you in hot water and me too. Listen, I believe there's something happening. I question the motives. I don't think most people who are targeted really understand the motives. And in many cases, there may not be any motive. They're just being driven to distraction, driven around the bend because they can. Appreciate the call, Lee, from Los Angeles. Let's say hi to, is it Carlos in Carson, California? Good morning, Carlos.
Yes, good morning, Richard. Sirhan Sirhan, Charles Manson, the Son of Sam killer in New York, the kids in Columbine, Jack Ruby, they all had one person in common. And this was Jolly West, a psychiatrist who worked on the MKUltra mind control experiments of the CIA. Okay? And, of course, when you think of the Korean guy that went out there and killed 32 people, I read something whereby his sister belonged to the CIA. So, I mean, and then you had a Texas Tower shooter who killed a bunch of people in Texas back in 1963. And, of course, that was the first time they called SWAT in. Of course, the crisis created that. That paved the way for the SWAT, the first time they used SWAT. But he had been under some kind of mind control also. So all these people, a lot of serial killers are products of mind control. But then again, when I look at all these returning veterans that are killing themselves, I tend to think, and I question myself, and I say, are they being mind controlled? Are the medications that they're taking perhaps inducing the mind control to kill themselves as a population control measure?
Well, it's not a very effective way to control the population. Many of these things are unintended consequences. Sure, you mix pharmaceuticals with post-traumatic stress disorder, obviously that can end very badly. But I think, as Marie Jones pointed out earlier in the program, if you go through boot camp, that is a form of brainwashing and mind control. It is. I mean, you're to take someone and turn them into a killer, a killing machine. And part of your identity is erased and supplanted with this idea, that you are to go out there and kill. That can't help but that play out in tragic ways in the end.
No, but
I appreciate
but look,
the call.
If you look at the Second World War, First World War, suicides by returning vets did not happen then. I'm a Vietnam vet myself. It did not happen in Vietnam. It just happened recently here.
Well, that's true, but there's a big difference. No, that's true, Carlos, but a couple of big differences. Number one, returning vets from the Second World War were hailed as heroes. Contrast that with Vietnam when they came back after serving their country and they were called baby murderers. Also, the economic situation is completely different. After the Second World War, there were boom times. There were jobs available. And now, unfortunately, we have veterans returning home. They're broken individuals, and they have no prospect of gainful employment. Obviously, the other big difference is, unfortunately, the types of weaponry and bombs and so forth, these IDUs that are being used, just absolutely, destroying human beings, leaving people, just utterly wrecked. So I think there are a lot of, you know, major differences that separates the returning veterans from the Second World War and what's going on now. However, I think you made some valid points, Carlos. I appreciate the call. Let's say hi to, do we have time? I think we have time for Tom in Taft, California, on the Wild Card Line. Good morning, Taft.
Hello, sir. Great show, Richard.
Thank you.
You know, there's been, I'm well experienced with a lot of this. You know, I'm, you know, unfortunately, many of your TI individuals don't know who their money bags is. I have known who my money bags is.
What do you mean by money bags?
Money bags, the guy who finances the contract, the gang stalking contract, the who makes you a targeted individual. You know, I had a falling out with an individual I knew all my life in Chicago. And after that, all of a sudden, you know, I had noise harassment. I had, for 14 years, I've had burglaries in my residence, little vandalisms, little thefts, little crazy things done, the unbelievable things that would make you look crazy if you called the police and reported everything that happened. You know, but let me tell you, you know, people like the former chief medical officer of Finland by the name of Dr. Rauni Kild, R-A-U-N-I-K-I-L-D-E.
Yes, she just passed away recently, I believe.
Did she? I'm sorry to hear that. You know, she who wrote the microchip implants, mind control, and, you know, mind control and cybernetics, she wrote that great article. You know, she was one of the first medical doctors that corroborated this whole situation.
Absolutely. Tom, listen, I gotta. Well, we got a couple minutes here.
Well,
get right to your point.
Quick. Yeah. You know, but you look at parameters from U.S. Army War College, Spring 98, how they talk about a weapon that they have that can induce or prevent sleep. You look at wonder weapons from U.S. News and World Report, Dr. Alden Byrd, B-Y-R-D, in charge of the Marine Corps' electromagnetic weapons program, who said that they're capable. They have weapons that put sound in people's heads. You know, it says they have microwave sonic acoustic weapons that keep people from sleeping or to prevent them from sleeping or to induce sleep.
There's no question in my mind, Tom, that this technology exists. And when there, you know, when there is a, when you have the resources and you couple that with people who have, you know, ill intent, then these things are going to happen. I think you made one point that's very important to sort of reinforce, and that is that, you know, we tend to think that the perps are these, you know, rogue agents working for these shadowy government agencies. But as you point out, these things, this technology can be made available to, let's say, some, you know, some business person who's got an axe to grind. And, you know, there are shadowy corners on the internet when you can put up, you know, want ads. You know, you know, you're looking for someone to harass or to stalk or to target, you know, a former business partner or a jaded lover, etc. So it's not just government agencies. This is filtered down, you know, almost to ordinary citizens that have this capability.
Well, they knocked me out and put a chip in my tooth, and I didn't even know it. They told me this in Kingman, Arizona, and I started having tinnitus, you know, ringing in my ears and stuff. And it would get worse when I would call Coast to Coast up and complain about something, or, you know, it would get worse then. And which it doesn't say that in the tinnitus textbooks, you know, that tinnitus gets worse when you call Coast to Coast, you know. But the whole thing of it is, you know, psychiatry and the police need to wake up and realize that there's healthy people that are suffering trauma from being either implanted and targeted with CIA's Project Pandora.
Absolutely. Tom, I gotta take a break. I appreciate the call. Thanks for checking in from Taft. Taking us into the break, The Who with a brand new one. It's been quite a while since we heard from Roger and Pete. Here they are with Be Lucky. Coast to Coast AM continues right after this. And delighted to be sitting in for George Norrie tonight, this morning. Up here in Toronto, Ontario, I can be heard on The Conspiracy Show on AM 740 Zoomer Radio, and that's a 50,000-watt clear channel. It's a real flamethrower, and so the signal carries well down into the United States, so perhaps you've heard the program down there as well, or on one of our 30 affiliates. That's The Conspiracy Show. And the website, incidentally, is richardserrett.com. Richard Serrett, SYRETT.com. And you can also say hello on Twitter at Richard Serrett. We'll get back to open lines in just a moment. And a number of you still want to discuss mind control, electronic surveillance, social engineering by the government, the media. And this, of course, after our fascinating discussion with Marie Jones, the author of Mind Wars. And still no takers yet, as yet, on the most haunted location in your particular city or town. Perhaps we can get to that as well a little bit later. So that's all in store and upcoming as we continue open lines right here on Coast to Coast AM. Don't go away. Welcome back to Coast, Richard Serrett sitting in for George Norrie. Open lines, and we go to the wild card line. It's Jim checking in from Spokane, Washington. Good morning, Jim.
How you doing, Richard?
Very well.
Great show tonight. Hang on a second. There we go. Okay. I got pulled over this evening by a Spokane Valley police officer. You know, I don't mind if they pull me over. I'm legal. I got a good license. I got insurance. My tags are good. And, you know, the officer comes up to me and says my license plate's obscured. I know it's not. You know, I told the officers, no, it's not. He says, well, I couldn't see it. I was, well, you were just at a wrong angle. No, I was directly behind you. You know, and I know the law, you know, and you know, the officers wonder why they don't get any respect. The fact of the matter is, if they were honest with people, hey, I pulled you over, I thought maybe you might have been drunk or something, you know, and I just wanted to check, that'd been fine. But, you know, I mean, when you lie to me, that's like peeing on my head and telling me it's raining.
So what do you think he was really after?
He was looking to see if I was a DUI. I mean, I didn't tell the officer I had my scanner on. I knew two blocks before he flipped the lights on, he was going to pull me over. But, you know, I mean, if you want respect, you got to give respect. You know, I mean, I know a lot of officers listen to this. If they want the respect of the public, they got to give the respect. To be honest with us.
Oh, that's true, and I think this was something that was brought up when George interviewed Robert Putnam on I think it was Wednesday night, discussing. I think it was Robert Putnam. I may be mistaken, but it had to do with the loss of Fourth Amendment rights. And
he
attributed this to poor police training. And he said exactly what you just said, that they have to learn that they work for us.
Well,
they're not to treat American citizens that way.
Job. I respect their job. You know, I mean, I wouldn't want to do it. You know, I mean, it's a tough job. It's a lot of bull that they got to go through out here. You know, but, you know, I mean, if you're honest with the citizens, they may be honest with you back.
Well, part of the problem is I think everybody's on edge these days. And,
yeah.
And they're nervous approaching a car, you're nervous, and that's a recipe for disaster. And then and that's when these tragedies occur.
But I agree. I see stupidity everywhere, you know. I mean, people that are just totally unaware. And you try talking to them and making them aware of things, because I listen Coast to Coast every night. And, you know, I mean, it's a great program. You guys are very informative and everything. And I do my research, too, you know, and when I try to tell some of these people things, they're like, oh, no, you're just a hate monger. You're just doing this. Or you know, no, I'm not. You know, I mean, I'm trying to be real about it. I'm trying to give you a heads up, you know. Things are coming down, and we need to be ready for it.
That's true. But it can't be repeated often enough, though, that, you know, 95, 98, whatever the number is of police men and women are in the in that career for all the right reasons. They want to make a difference. They want to help. but it only takes one person with a gun with bad intentions to make life miserable for a whole lot of us. And
I understand, Jim.
I appreciate it. I got to move along, Jim, but I appreciate the call. Thanks for checking in from Spokane tonight. And next, we'll go to the wild card line again and say hi to Jeff in Culver City, California. Good morning, Jeff.
Hi, Dave. Hey, it's a great show tonight, man. I'm glad you guys are on, and Mrs. Marie Jones is on. These mind control programs, Dave, are not just all about population control or creating brainwashed assassins. I believe that many of these programs are designed for the primary purpose of getting those targeted or selected individuals to gain or gather information from foreign governments. Then that information is gleaned, and then used for political or corporate purposes. The CIA's priorities, first and foremost, is for the preservation of American corporate interests abroad. Our nation's security is a secondary consideration, and as the old saying goes, when Wall Street goes, so goes the nation. My question is this, Dave. If these very gifted or chosen individuals in such valuable mind control programs are useful and necessary to our country's prosperity and security, then why aren't their contributions to society fully recognized and adequately compensated for? And second, do you believe that their techniques will ever be fully disclosed, whether it's through technological machinery, telephonic relayed messaging, or some other hypnotic techniques? Do you think they'll ever reveal how they actually conduct their work? And I'll take your answer off there.
It's Richard, actually. Jeff, I appreciate the call. Well, the technology, I think we have a pretty good handle on a lot of it. We know about remote neural monitoring. One new piece of the puzzle that was revealed to me by Dr. John Hall, the author of Guinea Pigs, Technology for Control, has to do with EEG cloning and heterodyning, I believe it's called. And I don't understand the ins and outs. He's a medical doctor. I am not. But the idea is that they can capture your EEG remotely, and then whatever they need to do to that EEG to produce the types of symptoms that they want, whether it's forced speech, some involuntary action like waving your arms around, they can then manipulate your EEG, put it back into your head, and then your mind sort of entrains on that new EEG, which is your EEG, and then you start to produce these symptoms. This is apparently something that's fairly new and fairly recent. Well, we have researchers, people like Dr. Hall, who are finding out about it and reporting it. So we are in dribs and drabs. We have whistleblowers within the NSA and elsewhere that are revealing some of these methods. So I think we're getting a pretty good handle on how they're doing it. The big question is, who's doing it and why? And oftentimes, I don't think there is a reason. They do it because they can. We're all part of some grand experiment. And perhaps the end game is that we're all going to be targeted eventually. Let's say hi to Trina is in Langley, Virginia. Trina can either confirm nor deny. Trina has left us. I was going to say she could neither confirm or deny. She's with the CIA, of course, headquartered in Langley, Virginia. Haniel, is Haniel there from Miami, Florida?
Hello, Richard. How are you?
Good morning, Haniel. I'm well, thank you.
Good. It's the first time I'm talking to you, and I have a lot to say.
All right. Welcome, my friend.
Okay. I don't know where to start, but let me start with the micro air vehicle. I'm not joking. This thing looks like an insect, and it's been inside where I live three times, and once in public came to me, and I got a picture of it. And it has letters on the side of it, and it's no bigger than your little finger's fingernail. And it flies around, and it looks like it's videotaping my face when it comes up to me. And it goes around my head, and it, it's kind of frightening because when I was looking at it, it was like, is this thing really fake? Because it looks like a bug, but...
Do you have a picture of it? Did you take a picture?
Yes, I got a picture with my cell phone camera, and when I blow it up, when it's enlarged, it's like, oh my God, this thing is not an insect, you know? And that's why I'm a little bit nervous now, because I've realized since then that something is going on. And I'm looking back over the years, and I see how, you know, how, like, they've isolated me. My family don't talk to me. Nobody wants to get involved with the picture. I've sent it out to Wired Magazine. I've sent it out to Politica, ProPublica. I've sent it to George Norrie.
Do you have, like, a JPEG you could send it to me?
Yes, I do. But I can't send it until tomorrow.
That's fine. All right.
I'll send it to you tomorrow.
Through my website, richardserrett.com. I'd love to see that. Well, listen, the technology exists. I remember reading back a couple of years ago about, I think it was at Harvard, and they were one of the first to develop these. They're like...
Cambridge has a really detailed about micro insect flight, wing flapping, the whole thing. I read it.
That's right. They're insect drones. Absolutely. The technology exists. Now, why are you, though? Why are you being targeted?
That's what I'm saying. Well, I'm kind of a different person. I have dreadlocks, you know, and I've been a lot. I'm nearly 50 years old. I've been a lot of places. I've probably said something or come on the radar somehow. And maybe this hasn't been going on all my life because I was adopted as a child, and my father always hated me. There was always problems with me and the family, and he was a kind of mysterious guy too. So I don't know if maybe he had something to do with the whole thing, but here I am. I live in a van. I'm homeless. This has been chronic. Like, every time I get up off the streets, I'm back down in the streets. I'm a good person, but yet there's always some kind of fingers pointing at me, you know, and there's always a lot of, you know, I'm a less than, you know, tasteful person to society.
Aside from the insect drones,
yeah.
Jeff, what other?
Okay,
I'm sorry, Haniel. It's Haniel. My apologies, Haniel. What other symptoms are you experiencing?
The voice to skull. There's like a pressure wave that hits my eardrums where I'll be. It feels like tinnitus, right? But then all of a sudden, it's like you're in an elevator and boom, you know, the ears just go to a different pressure frequency. And then there's little suggestions that pop in, maybe, you know, a sentence long. There's conversations sometimes that I'm hearing, like, say, let's suppose you have a fan on. Coming through just the background sound of the fan, you'll hear, you know, like a conversation or voices, you know what I'm saying? But I'm not crazy. I don't hear voices telling me to do things. I just hear voices that are maybe meant to disrupt my normal meditative state. That's what I feel is going on. I feel like if I was in the meditative state that I want to belong to, it wouldn't be advantageous to these people that are doing this.
And you believe that this constant harassment surveillance has led you basically to become homeless. It's beaten you down to such an extent.
Yes. Yeah, I feel like it's a destabilizing factor in my life that I've been unaware of until recently. Now, I've done a lot of research on the internet. I see a lot of, you know, there's a lot of talk about targeted individuals. There's a lot of people that, you know, maybe they're too far off into one end. But, you know, I think about why they might be doing this, and to the people that are being targeted, what the motive or the purpose is. But it could be malicious, but you have to realize that there are social engineering projects afloat, you know, because when you look back at the history, okay, you mentioned before about the end of World War II, and to me, that was the last good war because there was a purpose for fighting that war. But then that was called the Office of Special Services or something. Then they became the CIA. And now that they are that, you know, declassified information has shown that they are doing this to American citizens on American soil. So I think we'd be very naive to believe that they're not, you know, and especially in this day and age where it's an open, you know, open-ended war on terror. Anybody can get crossed into their programs or their projects or whatever.
So, well, Haniel, let me just say this to you. The the thing that you have to avoid at all costs is despair.
No, I'm not in despair, but
that's good.
You know,
of course it's frightening.
When I become brave to it on the opposite end of the spectrum, when I become brave, I think that's what they want me to do is say more stupid things or be tough, act like a tough guy. You know what I mean? To bolster my defenses and, like, I know this is going on. So when I speak out about it, like, say I'm in the middle of the night. I'm laying there. I know they're listening. So I might say things, you know, out loud. I might, you know, I call them a coward straight to their faces because I believe it's a very cowardice operation that they're performing. And
have you reached out to, excuse me, Haniel, have you reached out to Derek Robinson at the group Freedom from Covert Harassment?
I'm going to write it down, but no, I haven't. Actually, I've been on more of a thought process of artificial intelligence. If this drone thing that's been coming to me is artificially autonomous or if it's controlled by an individual. Now, it was an operation down here in South Florida called Bold Alligator that was run by the Office of Naval Research. And that's what the letters on the side of this little insect look like they read, O-N-R. And I sent even the Department of Defense a copy of it because through my research, I tracked down there's an office called the Office of Rapid Reaction Technologies. And a guy, because the Washington Post said anti-war protesters were seeing these dragonflies that looked like they weren't insects. So this guy from the Rapid Reaction Office of the Navy said that if you see something, let me know. So I sent them the picture. Haven't heard anything back.
Well, I would love to see that picture, Haniel, and I hope that that you can send it to me in the next couple of days. And
so you said that was what? The website.
Oh, the organization is called Freedom from Covert Harassment and Surveillance. And if you just get access to a computer and Google, or put that into your search engine, Freedom from Covert Harassment and Surveillance, because I think it's important that you get in touch with. Others that are going through this, you do need a support network. I think it's great that you're going out there and doing research and trying to figure out what's going on, but you need to surround yourself with supportive people because I think that's the MO, right, is to isolate you. And once you're isolated and you're cut off from other people, that's when we start to despair and you have to be on guard against that.
I have a dog. I'm good. You know, I'm good with people. I have a few people I talk to, but it's like, you know, there's no help for poor people in general. And I think that's a lot of the people that are getting this treatment from what the powers that be is if you're poor and you have nothing, so there's nothing to lose. You know, you can't defend yourself. You can't hire a lawyer. You can't do anything.
You're so right, Haniel. It's true. From what I understand is that there's a long history we know of governments experimenting on their own people. And traditionally, they would use prison populations, or they would choose people that have drug addictions because those individuals are already discredited in society's mind. So they're not going to be believed. They are isolated. They've got a captive lab rat, if you will. Hang in there, Haniel. Don't despair. Bruce Springsteen takes us into the break with Thunder Road. We'll come back and take more of your calls. Open lines on Coast to Coast AM.